long term. We're thinking about training and communication integration and explore some other matters. So in terms of training and communication, we would like to include principle in future LFI communication and include principle in an LFI ethics course. And last but not least, explore coaching methods based on our guidelines, methods of audits, and badging or certificate. Because now that we've decided for these 8 principles, now we need to see how we can, from a very operational perspective, use them. So this is what we propose in terms of steps. Maybe, Suzanne, you can go to the next slide just to show the attendees the annex. Next slide, please. So here you find the reference and resources just for you to know how we worked. Next slide, please, Susan. So just some ideas about next steps and a few proposals to be tested from an operational perspective. And we tried here to, let's say how it could work. This is just an example. So if we go back to the next steps, let's say that the first thing was to present today DES principle. I think that we have to publish them, and then in the midterm we really need to call for volunteers on the LFI project to see how we can implement this principle in a project. So it would be the end of my presentation. I wanted to save a little bit of time for questions, interactions. So if you have any questions, do not hesitate.
Thanks a lot. This was great. I think this also expands, you know, the aperture of the projects in LFAI, right, which can be the candidates for what we label as trusted AI projects, right? So I think there was And you know, initially, just by looking at it, you know, explainability and transparency sound, you know, very similar. But I think, you know, once you have the details there, you know, it starts becoming more clear why they're different.
Which one did you say?
Like explainability and transparency, right? For the most part, like, you know, at least, you know, the short-term nomenclature, you know, AI systems being transparent means, you know, just explain everything you are doing. I think the angle which you took at it, which is essentially, you know, I should also know when I'm interacting with an AI system. And in a lot of cases, I don't know that. That's what you mean by transparency. So I think that definition, you know, clarifies that part.
Okay. We had the discussion within the group because at the beginning, some of the definitions seems to be, let's say some of the principles seem to be really closed. And when we dig in the principle, we finally discovered that it was not exactly the same. So this is why we have made a difference between, for example, transparency and the other one, I don't remember that. Explainability.
Okay, thanks. I think one thing which I would suggest is, given that, you know, this is now ready and endorsed by the principals working group, maybe I can share my screen, right? I mean, one immediate next item, even before the board meeting, can be to, let me try.
There is a question in the chat, I think, but anyway, if you want to go ahead.
While you answer the question, I will.
Yeah, Suad, there's a question in the chat about bias. I was wondering what you meant by harm exactly.
Sorry, what was the question? Sorry.
I was wondering what you meant by harm exactly.
Sorry. Yeah, that was my question. Thank you for picking that up. Yeah, I just want, in the bias slide, you're using the notion of harm, if I recall.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was wondering what you meant exactly.
Okay. Susan, can you go to this part of the presentation so that I can explain?
Sure.
Thank you.
I think, was it equitability?
Explainability.
Okay.
it was explainability.
It's equitability.
The idea behind this one was that when we talk about bias, in fact, we all know that we are full of bias. In fact, it's part of the humankind. It can't be avoided. We just have to be aware that we have bias. We have biases because the way we were educated, the way we interact with people, and even the way we talk to each other, let's say that we all have biases. We just need to be aware of that. It's not really important to have biases. It's part of being a human. No? It's not really important. What I wanted to say is that often when we're talking about AI, we think that we should avoid biases. Okay, sometimes we should avoid biases, but in fact, what is important is not to avoid biases, is to avoid having biases that will harm people. For example, if you have some biases around, some prejudice around people because of their color, because of their origin. Of course, if you implement this bias in a machine, in the way it learns, you will harm people. It's not you may harm people, you will certainly harm people by making decision that will go against them just because they are different, just because of the prejudice. So it's a bias that could cause harm. It's something we should avoid. So this is why we say that AI should take deliberate space to avoid intended or unintended bias and unfairness that would inadvertently cause harm. The idea is that AI needs biases to learn and needs to be also aware of the biases in order not to make decisions that will be unfair to people. So as we can't avoid them, let's use them, let's be conscious of them. And let's say the limit of that is not harming people. This is what we wanted to say behind this notion of harming people, in fact, essentially. Is it clear for you, or do you need more explanation?
So, quick questions, like if I have a system that is a little biased and it's harming people, but across the board, a little bit, everyone at the same in the same way. In this sense, it could be a fair system because it's so harming everyone a little bit in the same amount. You know what I mean? So I was curious, but I don't want to hijack the whole conversation. So
No, but it's good because in fact, if we take your example, it's a very good example, in fact. We know that biases are unavoidable. They can't be avoided. We can do whatever we want. We will try, of course, but we can't avoid them. Let's say that for me, let's say that it's more acceptable to have a machine arming a little bit people, but all people, which is fair, than choosing a part of the people because of their, identity, race, whatever you want, and arm some people and not arming other people. Yes, it's preferable. I don't say it's good, but we know that it's not avoidable. So because it's not, it's not something we can avoid, it's more acceptable. It doesn't mean that we should agree, of course, but it's more acceptable, that's all.
Yeah, I think it may be just worth mentioning that these principles, as they were put together, ultimately the objective is to serve as basically, you know, as the name suggests, the higher level principles that then can be adopted by the underlying use case specific requirements. And I think the point that you mentioned is quite important when it comes to all of the principles, right? It's not about just having a blanket set of restrictions that would apply across every single use case, because when building a prototype, you don't want to have the same level of red tape as you would when deploying a production system that will be touching the lives of, you know, perhaps a larger number of humans. So it is important to, you know, make sure that the principles are going to be use case specific, and the amount of underlying touch points and processes are going to be relative to the potential risk and harm that the use case has. And I think that's why the most exciting part of these principles will not be the principles themselves, but the underlying use cases that, you know, can be carried out throughout, whether it is, you know, Linux Foundation or non-Linux Foundation projects, because that's where we will be able to start going into those type of corner cases, which, you know, as you would in specific industries like insurance or manufacturing, or even, you know, more specific automotive, the constraints that you'd encounter are potentially very different. But yeah, I mean, that's definitely a good question that appears in this area. And I think it's, yeah, undesired consequences proportion.
Yes, yeah, in addition, quickly to that, we just wanted to tell you that this principle, they are now generic to give room to interpretation, in fact, in order not to block any LFI project, but they're strong enough not to be, let's say, biased as well. So they can be used the way they are written, but there is enough room to interpretation so that you can develop them within your project.
Thank you. Hi, David Martin. I had a general question.
David, I do need to keep things on agenda, right? So
I understand. Just one question. In any of these principles, and I may have missed one or two, do we have liability?
We have accountability, which is quite the same. We had a discussion about that. So we decided
liability, yeah, where the AI makes a mistake and a subject matter expert or a human who's affected by that mistake says you're wrong.
Yeah, it's covered by accountability, in fact. Because we were talking about this idea of liability, but in fact, we didn't want people to be afraid by using this word. So we used accountability instead of that, because you have to be responsible, whether human or AI, for what you've done. So accountability is for us, it's the relevant way to be liable for.
Okay.
Well, thanks. So let's shift the gears a bit. And thanks. I think this is great. The minimal thing which I was saying, you know, and I don't. Oh, so Sai Shruti is here. I think one thing which can be done immediately, probably as you know, part of it is, if you can surface it up on the Trusted AI page, right? So essentially, you know, I'm thinking more like projects, participants, principles, right? They can appear here, yes, in a sense, so that, you know. And that probably can be, hopefully, if it can be done before the board meeting, right? There is just one place to point.
Do we work with Jacqueline for
then,
that?
You know, maybe the presentation can be happily. I'm sorry?
Do we work with Jacqueline to get that to happen?
Sai Shruti has editing rights to this page. She can.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Yep. Work with her. Yep.
That's great. Okay.
Okay. So.
And about calling for volunteers, because I think it's going to be something that would be really important in order to implement the principles in real life, I mean.
Cool, okay. Thanks, so that was the first thing. And Andrew and myself, we will keep ourselves quick. So I think this is, Hiram, one of the things, right, or one of the points which you brought up last time was, you know, around the abstractions, right, which you are looking at and which you are building, right? And we did discuss that, you know, this is one of the things we will quickly go through in terms of, you know, at our end, how we are abstracting, at least in the context of, you know, more using these things in you know, or production like MLOps scenarios, right? So for the most part, right, our open source effort on that side has been co-twined with Kubeflow, right? We are working heavily in the Kubeflow community, right? And Kubeflow gives us the width and the aperture to actually go through the breadth of the machine learning and AI lifecycle, you know, throughout, you know, building a model, training a model, validating a model, deploying a model in production, then, you know, consequently monitoring the model in production. So that's a great candidate for us to actually, you know, start integrating these projects into more, using it in the ML and AI lifecycle end-to-end with a more abstracted use cases. The two projects where I wouldn't probably significant is a wrong word, right? But at least the two projects where we are invested more and contributing more in the Kubeflow umbrella in that lifecycle is pipelines and production model serving and monitoring, right? So these are the two areas where we are doing more, contributing more, and also using more. So in a sense, like the goal has been, you know, with Kubeflow pipelines, essentially, we have, you know, contributed integrations, right, and components for AI Fairness 360 and ART, right? So essentially, if as part of your machine learning pipelines, you do want to inject, you know, after your model is trained, right, or it can be done, you know, even when you have an initial model, right? But if it is in part of the lifecycle where before you have deployed your model and you want to run validation checks, you can run validation checks around, you know, bias detection, consequently a mitigation, adversarial detection, and consequently a mitigation, right? And based on those, right, if, for example, your adversarial check, you know, doesn't produce the right results, you do find, you know, the model is vulnerable to adversarial attacks, or the fairness metrics on which the model was judged is, you know, is lower than the threshold which we are looking for, then you can, you know, have automated means to actually launch retraining, etc. So that's available, that's there, right? And if this is an area, right, which your team would be interested in, you know, this is something which we can come back and demo in the next meetings as well. The second thing is with Kubeflow serving, this is more, you know, black box model approach at this point. Your model is deployed in production live, giving predictions. So the first part is, you know, explaining your model predictions. So for that, you know, we have integrated AI Explainability 360 as part of that. The adversarial robustness integration PR is almost ready. It's going in, and the goal is, you know, to make it part of KF serving before the end of the year. Now, both of these are working on a black box methodology where we are able to give, you know, a score about, or we are able to explain the model predictions as well as give you a score about, you know, model's vulnerability to adversarial attacks in real time on an individual transaction. Now, when we go further, something like fairness, right, that requires a little bit more historical data, or I would say, you know, more data over a period of time to actually make a correct judgment whether the model predictions are getting biased over a period of time, right? And for that, the way we are approaching it is, you know, essentially using payload logging behind the KF serving umbrella to collect the request and responses over a period of time. And once we have, you know, collected enough number of requests and responses over a period of time, you know, using the backend technology, right, which has been integrated in KF serving using the standardized cloud events protocol. And that allows you to send these payload logs to any of the persistent storage mechanisms, whether it's a, you know, Kafka message queue or a relational database. But once we have that data, then, you know, we want to use it for fairness analysis, right? So currently, the way it appears when the models are running in production is essentially, you know, explainer or adversarial detector becomes another component in addition to predictor, which is the core component to give your model predictions. And quickly, we have Andrew, right, who has been working on the PR for this. So Andrew, do you quickly want to go through the rest of the slides? And, you know, if you have time, right, we can do some quick demos.
Yeah, sure. So here we have the beginner explainer spec for AIX. And this one is already contributed back into the KF serving project. So if you want, and I'll show a link later for it, you can go into the project and try it out. So in the first part, there's the predictor spec, and that can basically be any KF serving image, or that's a custom container, but it could be any predictor image that works for images, because currently the AIX explainer spec is working with LIME images, so it only works for models that are using images. And so then the second spec is the explainer spec, and that's what is more important for us. And you can see it says the type is LIME images, but you can also specify certain configurations as to how you would like to run that. And so basically what we're gonna see in the demo is we're gonna run through the LIME example, and we're gonna have send a request and then get a response back from the KF serving inference service that gives us an explanation. So Anna, should be, let me share my screen. I can run through that. Thank you. Okay, so for this, basically what we've done is you apply one of the YAMLs that we have set up, and this we'll give you an example. It displays the specs that we had seen previously, and you can specify what resources you need and anything else besides that, depending on how intensive the process is. So we'll apply that, and then after that, we'll set up to connect with our inference service and then send a request. And so I'm gonna run this script where we take this image, and then we're going to send the request to our inference service, and then we'll get the response back and we'll unwrap it and show the explanation. So I'll just run that script, and the basic setup is to just standard with all the KF serving explainer tools. You need to get your ingress host and port and have the model name so that you can get the route to the specific explainer. And so then we get our explanation, and if we want, we could send a few more and try and get an idea based off of, we could change some of the configurations and try and get a better idea off of the explanation and merge them together if we needed. But yeah, for this example, it just uses LIME, and you can see the highlighted pixels are telling us what our model has a certain level of confidence on those pixels showing that it is of a certain classification. So that is for the AIX example. And then the second one we have set up is the ART example spec. And so the AIX one is already in KF serving. The ART example is not in KF serving, but is ready to be put in a PR and sent their way for integration. So the same idea, we have a predictor spec that can be whatever you need for that area. And then we also have the explainer spec. You'll see that it's a little bit more involved here because we haven't implemented it with the KF serving tools so that it's more simple, and there's a little bit more going on in terms of deploying the Docker image rather than just setting it through KF serving and allowing them to do the setup. But you get the same kind of deals. You can set the number of classes and define what type of adversarial attack you'd like to do. And so for this one, we were using Square Attack. That'll be the first implementation. And we'll get something similar to this. We'll send an image in and receive a response, hopefully showing an example where our model misclassifies. So the setup is very similar to the notebook we'd shown in the past, and or the last notebook that we showed. We send the request, and then we check to make sure that the adversarial example is different and giving us something that is useful for us. So I'll send a request for that as well. It's the same kind of setup as we'd used previously, where we just set up the ingress host and the ingress, and then we send a request to the inference service. Yeah, so you can see we received a response back where the originally the model predicts a 3, and then once we send it and we get a new image, which is the one shown here, we get an 8 showing the misclassification. So that's kind of the idea. And as Animesh mentioned, in the future, we'll push for the payload logging. I'm working on that right now, and hopefully get the first component for AIF in, and then we can work on adding more and more of the methods for each of these.
Thanks, Andrew. So very quickly, one thing to clarify, right, in context of CAPE serving, which is, you know, model serving platform, the methods we are choosing are, you know, black box methods, right, which are available in these tools, right? Now, when you are using it in the context of the pipelines, right, you don't need to have to, you know, just use those algorithms. You can use the other algorithms which are available in these tools, right? But black box algorithms become important when the model is running live in production, right? And you don't have a means to actually, you know, go and use the model code to figure out, you know, a vulnerability to adversarial attacks, et cetera, right? So that's where, you know, we have to rely only on black box algorithms. But as I mentioned, if you are using it in the build part of the lifecycle, when you are building or training your models, that's the time you will use something like pipelines components, which will allow you to then use, you know, the wide range of algorithms which are available in these tools. Cool. So I think we are doing right on track on time. Hiram, is like what you have to present, can that be accommodated in the next 15 minutes? Otherwise, no.
Yeah, if you'd like, I can punt to next time. I don't want to take a lot of time because I've got to go also by nine. Okay. But if you'll let me just take 10 minutes, I can just introduce a few things.
That'll be great. Yeah.
But I would love to, if there are, I'd love to hear any questions and discussion about the excellent work you presented. I'm really excited about what you're doing there, and it aligns really well with our interest at Microsoft.
So, I mean, that will be great, right? There are folks from Microsoft, Hiram, who are actually also contributing to CAPE serving, right? In the past, they have contributed, you know, the Onyx integration into CAPE serving in terms of, you know, serving Onyx models. So, you know, if you want, you know, offline, we can share email and I can connect you with the part of the Microsoft which is contributing to CAPE serving. And then, you know, we can take the conversation from there. Yeah.
Great.
Thanks. Go ahead, Hiram. You can share.
I am now sharing my screen. Just one moment here.
Yeah, we can see your screen.
Okay, which one do you see?
We see the adversarial ML matrix
okay.
description.
Great. Hey, so I just want to provide a brief update on what my team is doing. And it's maybe a little, you know, it's a little bit different. We're trying to reach a community that's a security community. But my team at Microsoft is the Azure Trustworthy Machine Learning team. And our focus really is to enable security analysts and machine learning engineers to protect their machine learning systems from attack. And on my team, there's two parts. We do red team efforts, actually. So machine learning focused red team efforts. And we have wrapped elements of ART to provide tooling to make that automated and easy. Some examples, we'll go to some service inside Microsoft, we'll partner with them, and they'll tell us their worst privacy or security nightmares. And we'll try to tinker on that model and try to see if we can get at some of those scary outcomes and then help them to fix that if necessary. And then the other side of the house is our blue team efforts to enable teams to protect against those kinds of attacks. And we learn a lot in those red teams engagements. So we're a really applied team and have spent a lot of effort bringing adversarial machine learning, especially to the InfoSec community. So just for 5 or 6 minutes, I wanted to tell you about two efforts that are really meant for the InfoSec community to better handle and think about, especially security threats of adversarial machine learning. So the first is, if you're not aware, there's in security, there's this attack matrix especially for enterprise that describes, it's actually a summary of sort of nation state attacks against security systems, enterprises, cloud. And it begins with everything from reconnaissance efforts, and there's columns in the matrix that end up at some impact, like the data was stolen from the enterprise. And each column in the original MITRE ATT&CK framework, I could actually go there in my webpage, just attack.mitre.com or .org rather, like details some of the specific techniques that that are used. So this is a common thing for information security. And we partnered with lots of organizations, including MITRE, to put out into the community the first way to think about what it would mean to attack a machine learning, attack an enterprise that now used machine learning at several points in their security posture or in another part of their process. So this is a very rough, very first cut. There are actually lots of parts that I don't agree with myself, but we want to get this into the hands of the community and help them run with this. Again, the main idea being, this is how security people think about security. Let's map kind of attacks against adversarial machine learning into a similar framework so that they can see, as an example, how we do a red team attack at a machine learning red team attack at Microsoft does map to these. So there's a reconnaissance effort. We'll discover models. We'll use traditional security account techniques like phishing to get a valid account to get access internally to a model. And then we'll do a model evasion on that internal model in order to affect some other downstream process. Like in one example, we cause a denial of service attack by fooling a model, right? So you can see that any one attack in an InfoSec space can hop between kind of a traditional security violation and a machine learning security violation in this attack. So I would love, if anybody's interested, to talk about this online, I'll do so. Otherwise, I will shift to a second way that in the community, we're trying to bring concepts of adversarial machine learning to the information security realm. So the second is, and you can go to this website, mlsec.io, is the Machine Learning Security Evasion Competition. And the caveat here is that for a decade, adversaries have been evading malware, much of which has been based on either primitive or advanced machine learning. And so this is a really natural way to think about the security of machine learning. And what we have tried to do in our community engagements is bring some of the more modern concepts of adversarial evasion for machine learning to malware to get information security people to think about both defenses and attacks. And so if for the past few years, I've hosted this competition called the Machine Learning Security Competition that really breaks down into two parts. There's a defender challenge where contestants could upload defenses for adversarial attacks. And then there's an attacker challenge where in a subsequent round, attackers actually attack these defenses that were submitted by contestants, right? Now this is all very specific to detecting malware. I want to jump to the conclusions here of what we found. A couple of really interesting things that we discovered is that, especially for attackers in the attacker challenge, the way that people win is not through like a hop, skip, jump attack, a black box attack against machine learning. They don't. They win by simple manual, like expert-driven, expert-guided evasion techniques, which is actually consistent with what the malware industry sees. One thing that is really interesting, though, is between last year and this year, the number of attacks that were algorithmic in nature jumped 40%. So we're seeing more people interested in automating the way that they're evading these malicious file detection capabilities. So this competition concluded a few months ago, and humans at this point are still more efficient than algorithms in terms of how well that they can attack and evade a machine learning system for detecting malware. But the algorithms, of course, can scale. So this competition was a really interesting way. We got a lot of engagement from security people who are now learning about the weaknesses and the strengths of machine learning. And we're, you know, we're driving them to understand some of the ramifications of machine learning and the blind spots. So I'll stop there and allow any time for discussion or questions, Animesh, if that's okay.
Yeah, no, that's great. So I think just a couple of questions on this side, Hiram. So one point which you brought up was, you know, the adversary level threat metrics, right, which you are, you know, working with the community. Where and how are you engaging with the community? How can we get, you know, the enthusiasts from IBM, right? I mean, Beat is here, plus, you know, the folks who are Andrew, right, and others who are also working on adversary robustness, to actually participate with that. And the second thing is the challenge which he organizes, right, in terms of, you know, crafting attacks and then, you know, using defense algorithms, right? Is that something which is going to be repeated soon next year? And how can, you know, the teams participate in that? And how can we also actually, you know, leverage LFAI to actually advance and then get it to more people to participate? Yeah.
Yeah, let me take those in reverse order. So the competition, yes, it will exist in some form next year. We may actually zoom out a little bit and focus less on malware and more on a more complete security story. So for example, machine learning is often used to detect phishing emails. So instead of just having a malware evasion, which is really a technically challenging problem for an algorithm, crafting a phishing email it's much simpler. The reason that malware is challenging is all of the constraints around file type and file functionality. So if I change bytes in a file, it will break the file. That's unlike an image where I can change a pixel and not break it. So those constraints turn out to be a challenge for contestants, and we might loosen those. Incidentally, one thing that we could do to help, we would like to potentially feed back some of the attack lessons learned, especially for these constrained problems, maybe back into LFAI's adversarial robustness toolkit. So some of the attacks that work well are really just black box optimization methods, like using HyperOpt, in fact, that use sequential model-based optimization to allow variable constraints on the model input. And those have been useful for us, not just for malware, but for lots of handcrafted feature models inside of Microsoft attacking those. So getting those wrapped back into like a common community framework so that people can use them could actually help in making this competition easier for people to pull off. The first question was about the attack matrix and how to be involved. And so that there is a Google group that is signed up that's managed mostly by MITRE and Microsoft folks that I will have to find a link and send that to you. But if you'd like to be involved, I mean, we want help. Everybody involved in this effort know that this is like throwing the mud at the wall, and this is what's stuck. And we have a lot of work to do to make this something that is meaningful to the security community. And what those things are, in fact, is like we want to have, if I can see one here, we want to have an example of real red team activity or even academic research that can trace a path through this matrix. So if you look through the examples on this webpage and you see a gap in, oh my gosh, the folks forgot about this attack and it involved a different kind of technique, then that is evidence that is needed to update this matrix. You can go to this GitHub, you can modify, you can submit pull requests, and a process is kind of in place for the MITRE folks to manage that, much like they are managing this attack for enterprise. So I guess the two things is sign up to the Google Groups if you want to be on feeds about what's happening. And that's also a good way to just be in a conversation about people thinking about this, that there's lots of chatter going on there that's even not about the matrix. And then the second thing is, you know, make a PR by gathering evidence of attacks.
Great, thanks. I'll let you know others to pose any questions. I think one of the things just quickly from the last time was around, you know, the abstracted CLI interface you are creating on top of ART, and maybe we can take it in the December monthly meeting. We would love to see that. So I think 2 points you made in terms of being able to contribute some algorithms back to adversarial robustness toolbox, that will be great in terms of us participating in this matrix and the upcoming, you know, the events, that will be great. And the third thing is, you know, looking at, and probably, you know, this is a topic for next meeting, looking at, you know, the abstracted CLI which you are creating. The one thing which I do want to mention is, like, you know, so the GitHub, Trusted AI GitHub is a GitHub organization, right? So if there are efforts from your side or there are projects from your side, you would want to donate to LFAI, right, for the larger community to you know, communicate and work on it, that would be, you know, very, very welcome. So, yeah. Anyone else has questions? Biat, others?
Hello, this is Biat.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Very interesting presentation. Maybe one quick question I would have. Do you publish the approaches of the MLSEC competition?
Yes, you can go to this mlsec.io, and they are listed. You may not be able to see this, but there are links here to the winning solutions. And some of these are blogs, some of them are archive papers, but in order to win, they must publish. So those are here. You can also go to see the GitHub site, and at the GitHub site, we have sample code to all of the attacks and defenses for this. So that there's a lot of detail in here.
Oh, that's great. I'll take a look. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet.
So there are no other questions. Thanks, everyone. We will skip, you know, the project updates for this one, all right, and come back in December with, you know, more robust project updates. So that also gives the time to the team, right, to add more items on the list. And we will probably, you know, for the next one, this summer's meeting, we will start with the project updates and then go into rest of the topics. So I think it was great today in terms of, you know, seeing the final outcome from the principals working group. Let's get it on the website. And Hiram, with your team, right, I'll start touching on, you know, the KF serving integration work, as well as, you know, the more collaboration around, you know, the adversarial robustness toolbox and the IBM research team here. Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks. Bye. Have a nice evening or day. Bye bye.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Yeah.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving.